journey into the Bible and explore its hidden text and rich wisdom. Join Adel Kazilski Mondays at 1 p.m. for the trip of a lifetime.
Shavuot Tov and welcome to 101.9 Chai FM. I'm Adel Kazilski and we're here to share some Divrei Torah, some words of Torah, the Torah that keeps Jews alive. This is our glue. Whether we find ourselves in any corner of the world, and it doesn't matter whether we're Ashkenazi or we're Sephardi, whether we are living in South Africa or living in Alaska, the thing that keeps us together is the fact that we subscribe to the Torah as our way of life. The Torah being the Old Testament, the five books of Moses, as well as the oral law that we received from our rabbis. And we are discussing the Parsha of Yitro and we're discussing keeping Shabbat. And last week I introduced to you the fact that there are 39 categories of work that we are not allowed to do, that we that are creative in nature. And even though the majority of them, in terms of them being av melachot, which means the head category, because we aren't farmers, as most of them are agricultural, even though there are others that are not, it is the derivatives of it that really run our lives today in terms of what we can and what we cannot do. And so I'm slowly going through them. I'm going to make the same proviso, like I said last week, I'm going to say it this week, I am not the rabbi, and any question that you want to know of that which is permissible or not permissible, please speak to your local Orthodox rabbi to give you a clear halachic ruling on what I'm going to say. There are certain places, people where the customs might differ, where the law might be slightly interpreted in a different manner, different people take on different stringencies. So if you have got a question of something that I have ticked off for you, then please can you ensure that you do speak to a local Orthodox rabbi. My job, okay, is that I just get you to understand a little bit more of why we don't do what we don't do on Shabbat and how it's derived. And again, it's a very, very general discussion, and there's a lot to be said, and truthfully, I probably could take each malacha, and if studied properly, I could go through each and every single one, and we'd be here forever and ever and ever. I'm just giving you a taste. So please keep that and bear that in mind, and please always contact a rabbi, an Orthodox rabbi, and ask him a question if there is something that I'm saying right now that you feel you're not keeping, or you are keeping, you're not keeping it properly, and we can take it from there. Right. Last week, we went through, I think it was maybe six of the 39 melachot. We spoke about plowing, planting, harvesting, gathering, threshing, winnowing, and I think we ended off on selecting. Okay, we're going to continue from that now, and we are going to continue talking about certain creative acts, the first one being grinding. Grinding, toichen, is the act of breaking down a substance into small, usable pieces. So grinding is very interesting because we do have a lot of derivatives today. One of them, very interestingly, is medicines. Why? Because medicines were once prepared by grinding and cannot be taken even today unless there is a specific circumstance. So obviously, if somebody is sick, somebody is has to take an antibiotic, somebody's Shabbos is being ruined by the fact that they need the medication, then medication is allowed. There are other instances where some people take vitamins, for example. Some rabbis will hold that they can because it's in the natural course of things. You take it every single day of your life. So Shabbat isn't any different. Other rabbis would say not. Again, as I said in the beginning, please speak to your rabbis. But medicines is a toladah. It is a derivative from grinding, i.e. breaking a substance into small usable pieces. There are another one, for example, is grating potatoes. One is not allowed to grate on Shabbos because, again, you're breaking down the substance into small usable usable pieces, and therefore a grater is not allowed on Shabbos. So if you are going to want to serve any type of food that needs grated material, for example, you're doing a sushi salad and you need grated carrots and grated cucumbers, then find the grater before Shabbos, do the grating, put them in plastic containers in the fridge, and then use them on Shabbat. This is when you're taking something raw and changing and chopping it into small pieces. Example that you can do, okay, is you can, for example, take matzah and crumble or crush it by hand because it consists of flour which already has been ground, meaning regrinding is permitted. You're not allowed to grind in the first place. So regrinding is permitted. And then this comes down to the discussion about small kids. When one has babies in the house, we know that we have to give food that's generally mashed, it's ground, it's made much, much, much smaller. And so there is a whole lot of laws around food preparation for young kids. Generally, for example, if you need to mash a banana, some rabbis will allow it by you doing it with what we call a shinoi, a difference. Meaning if you took a fork in your right hand, and that's how you mash the bananas, you could do it only for the kid, but you would do it with the back of your utensil, maybe using your other hand. There is some opinions that say, for example, it doesn't apply to a banana. Again, this is why I say to you, when it comes to all these mashed foods, please speak to your rabbi. Having said that, vegetables may be cut with a knife into small, not tiny pieces, as long as it's for immediate use. So if you're preparing Shabbat lunch and you're wanting to make a salad and you've got a cucumber, even baby cucumbers, and you want to cut them up, you can, as long as you don't dice them into tiny, tiny pieces, you can slice an onion, tomatoes, cucumbers, whatnot, and you may use it as long as it's for prompt use, that you're preparing it to eat straight away. Okay. There is another av melacha called meraked. Meraked is around the concept of sifting, separating mixed objects with a strainer. So immediately, and most importantly, you cannot use a strainer on Shabbat. Okay, you cannot strain out food or water or doing something to separate the mixed objects with a strainer. You know, I don't think that anybody would really think about doing that, but making sawdust, you can't. So if you're sitting there and you're scraping the wood in order to make sawdust, that you cannot do. You cannot remove pebbles from sand. So one has to be careful with sifting. We then have the idea of lush. Lush is kneading. What does kneading mean? Kneading means combining particles with liquids to form a dough or a paste. So again, here the tolada here, one of the derivatives would be, for example, when you've got a powdered cereal and you're mixing it with milk, are you allowed to do that for kids particularly? Okay, well, you can't make a porridge on Shabbat, but there is the ability to make children's food, but you're going to have to do it in an unusual manner. So you've got to be very careful with the preparation of children's food. Another is, for example, little kids, they cannot mix earth with sand and sand with water. There's a whole lot of things. So certainly if you're by the beach or you have a sand pit in your house, they can't make sand cakes or do anything of that sort, because that too would consider the idea of Lush. If you do have any questions or you want to make a comment, please feel free. 34519 is our SMS line. 0618951019 is our WhatsApp number. We're going to go for a short break, and we'll continue right after this break.
This is Mystical Text with Adel Kazilski.
Okie dokie. We are now going to probably cover one of the most complicated of the 39 melachot, and that is the prohibition of oife. Oife means baking. What does baking mean? It means changing the physical state of a substance by heating it. So basically, this concept of baking really rules a lot around how we conduct serving food on Shabbat. We know that almost absolutely everything needs to be prepared before Shabbat, so that we can enjoy Shabbat. In fact, it says he who prepares on Shabbat will have Shabbat. He who doesn't prepare for Shabbat will not have on Shabbat, which, just as a caveat on the side, is also used very much as the idea that this world is like the 6 days of the week, and the world to come is the seventh day. And so he who prepares on the 6 days of the week, he who prepares in this world and is a law-abiding Jew, and makes a great effort to have a connection with God and fulfill God's will, and you prepare yourself in this world with all your deeds of goodness and kindness, of mitzvot and the learning of Torah, then you will have prepared yourself for the world to come. The vice versa then obviously would also appear. But that's just as a side note. Coming back to the actual practical laws of Shabbat, okay, one is not allowed to cook. And so there, as I said, there is a lot of intricacies around it. And I'm going to go through a few, but again, I am saying that this malacha is so very complicated that please speak to your rabbi. The best way to get out of it all is to ensure that you have prepared everything before Shabbat. Obviously, things like salads and putting together of certain foods, like a sushi salad or making a fruit platter, those things you can do on Shabbat, but it doesn't constitute cooking. It's the baking that is a problem. Right. So in doing that, I want to talk about a concept about hot liquids having the ability to cook food. Now, if you have a kettle, and this kettle basically is what we will call in Shabbat lingo on the fire, okay? We know that the majority of hot liquids that are on the fire that have either an electrical element connected to it, or it's sitting on a stove or wherever like that, that is called al ha'esh, on the fire. And it basically has the ability to cook all foods as long as it's around 45 degrees centigrade, which is really not the most buoyant to do, is you cannot put a pot of raw food on a fire on Shabbat. And again, when I'm saying a fire, today maybe we don't have fires. Lots of us have gas, so it is exactly that. Even if you say you had the gas running the whole time, because switching on the gas is a different melacha, but say the gas was running all the time, you cannot take a pot and stick it on the fire directly and allow it to cook its stuff. That is in halachic lingo called kli rishon. Kli is a vessel, the first vessel. The first vessel holding it. So any raw food, okay, that needs to be cooked cannot be cooked on an open fire because it is a kli rishon. Now, how do we land up heating things up on Shabbat? Well, there's we have a concept called kli sheni, which means a second vessel, and kli shlishi, which is a third vessel. And basically, the concept is the further away that you remove the liquid from the original source of where it is being cooked, it loses the capacity to cook the food. So a kli rishon, a pot on the fire, for sure cooks all foods. A kli sheni probably will cook most foods. A kli shlishi will only cook delicate foods. And so what we do on Shabbat is if we are wanting to have a hot meal, we have various ways, thank God, with the modern invention, to still enjoy Shabbat and enjoy, hot food. Erev Shabbat, one has to ensure that all the food that they're going to have on Friday night, and I'm going to divide it between Friday night and Shabbat today. So all the food for Friday night needs to be fully cooked before Shabbat. So you can prepare your entire meal, you can prepare your soup, you can prepare your schnitzel, your rice, your vegetables, even if you've got a hot apple pie, everything has to be fully cooked and ready. Once the food is fully cooked, the food generally cannot be cooked again. And then what one will do is one will place it on or in a place that will keep the food warm. Most people like to use hot trays. You cannot use the hot tray directly because the hot tray is considered as the first source of heat, just like your stove is. So we will cover it with a blech or with a piece of silver foil, and we will put our food on that, cover it maybe with a little bit of a blanket or a towel, and the food stays really, really warm and really nice on Shabbat. One can also stick it in an oven. The problem with that, if you are not, you don't have a technologically advanced kitchen, is that you cannot switch off the oven. You cannot obviously turn the oven up or down. If you leave it cooked food in an oven on 100 degrees, you will have hot food. So you can only use really an oven if you have a time switch that will automatically switch it off, unless you want to just pay for the electricity the entire time. Most people tend to go to hot trays because those allow it's much easier. You can put a time switch on the hot tray. There's now also hot trays that automatically switch off after 2-3 hours. So we've got a whole lot of technological things that we can do to ensure that we have hot food on Friday. Hot food on Shabbat day is a little bit more difficult because, again, the food needs to be cooked and ready before Shabbat. And so what people tend to do is one of two things. Either we will end up using a cholent pot, and a cholent pot is really a slow cooker. If you leave it on automatic and you leave sufficient water in it, et cetera, you can put in meat and potatoes and chicken and whatever. You even can make a vegetable cholent. I've at times made it like a lentil meal out of it. Basically, all of it has to go in either fully cooked before Shabbat or fully raw. You switch it on before Shabbat, and it takes its time to slow cook over the 16 hours until the meal the next day. One has to, again, be careful. You cannot stir the food. You cannot open up the lid. You cannot do anything that will increase or cause the food to be cooked faster. So you cannot add hot water. You cannot do any of those things. So it's quite an art. It's a bit of a practice. But generally, most people get it right eventually. Maybe there's a few either raw or overcooked meals on Shabbat initially, but the slow cooker, the crock pot, is a very good way to have a hot meal on Shabbat. Alternatively, people generally like just to go a buffet cold, and you know, you can go for the cold meats and the chicken schnitzel and the salads and whatever have you, and then you just have room temperature food. There is a lot of discussion, and this I'm not even going to make the comments over the radio. Speak to your rabbi if you can heat up an already cooked food on Shabbat, as long as it's solid, as long as there's no liquid. It's very complicated. I'm not going to give anybody advice, but that is the way that we will have food on Shabbat. To note very importantly that one is not allowed to cover a pot containing uncooked food that is found on a fire. So you can, because that will hurry up the cooking of the food. So you've got to be careful about that. You cannot move the flames up and down. Generally, people like to remind themselves that they can't do that by covering the knobs of the hob on Shabbat. You cannot stir cooked food that is on a flame. So even in the crock pot, you cannot lift up the lid. You cannot pour hot water into it. You cannot stir it. You cannot put the lid back again. All of that will affect the cooking, and that you are not allowed to do. This then also has a derivative into this whole question about hot water. Okay, one cannot turn on the hot tap in your kitchen, in your bathroom, anywhere there, because what will happen when you turn on the hot water is that you cause more water to flow into the geyser, cold water, and then that will trigger that the hot water has to be boiled up again. So we do not use hot water on Shabbat. But having said that, we can have tea and coffee and all sorts of hot drinks on Shabbat if we have what we call a Shabbos urn. Now, a Shabbos urn has to be an urn that will maintain the heat of the water at a specific temperature without it being affected by whether you drain water or not. So it's very important that you just check with your Orthodox rabbi, and you check when you buy a Shabbat urn that is the case. Generally, what will happen with most urns is that, say, you will choose that the water remains at 70 degrees the whole of Shabbat. You will put the dial most to the 70 degrees. You will fill it up before Shabbat. It will heat up. And then what the kettle does is that it will pick up from the thermostat when it falls below 70, and it will automatically switch on. It will heat it back up to 70, switch off. It will wait until it falls, then it will switch on. That is generally how a Shabbos urn will work. And as I said, it is not affected of whether I'm draining water from it or not, as opposed to the tap, where when you switch on the tap, cold water is coming in and you're causing cooking to happen. However, having said that, because we have defined the fact that cooking basically happens from 45 degrees onwards, we've got a problem when we are using hot water from an urn. And so we go back to the concept of Kli Rishon, Kli Shani, Kli Shlishi, which means that when we are using hot water from the urn, we cannot take a tea bag, for example, and put it under the urn and then just pour the water straight into the cup where there is the coffee or the tea, particularly the tea, because it can come to, it cooks the tea leaves in order to release its essence. What we do in this case is we make a removal from the source of the heating three times. We take a cup, so the kettle is the Kli Rishon. We pour hot water into a cup, which is a Kli Sheni. Then we take the hot water that is in the second cup, the cup that we've collected the water, we pour it into a second cup, which is a Kli Shlishi, which is the third container, and into then we can make our coffee. We can add our coffee, our sugar, our milk, etc., etc., etc. Tea is I won't say controversial, but there are many opinions. Some people will not drink tea at all on Shabbat. Some people, if they do want to drink tea, will boil tea essence before Shabbat. They'll keep the essence warm and they will then pour the essence into the cup and pour hot water into the cup if the essence is cold, but they would have to put the hot water first. So some people will not use tea bags on Shabbat. So that is something very, very important. There is the concept of not squeezing the tea bag, but that is another malacha which we will get into. Right. The same thing really applies with soup. Okay, one has to be very careful if one has got very hot soup, that one then does not add extra stuff to the soup that will cook it further. So, for example, if one has a soup, those shkedei marak, those soup nuts, the best practice is to take the soup, pass the soup through a ladle, from the ladle into a plate. Some people do not hold the ladle as being the klisheni. They'll take it from one soup plate to another soup plate, and then you can drop your shkedei marak in it, or you can drop your challah. Again, there is place for discussion there. Please speak to your local rabbi around that idea also. Things like melting candles, over a flame on Shabbat is an absolute no-no. And then some people do have the query or the idea of, can I cook food on a radiator or on a gas heater? Or, for example, we have an anthracite heater. Can I heat up my food on there? And the answer is that cooking food on such a contraption hot enough to burn your hands, which is 45 degrees, is not allowed. Okay, so you cannot do that either. So again, it takes a lot of thinking out. It takes a lot of pre-planning, but once you get into a habit, you are able then to still have an incredibly enjoyable Shabbat with hot food and with everybody enjoying themselves. And I have to say, because that's just what it is, sometimes the way of the world is that things don't go your way, and inevitably in your Sabbath observing lifetime, there will be times where either, I don't know, the crock pot didn't switch on, or it broke down halfway, or the kettle didn't boil up, or I don't know, the time switch didn't work, or something. And inevitably, you will land up having to eat cold food, or, it just won't taste as nice. I don't think there's anybody around that is a Sabbath observer, a Shabbat observer, that hasn't had one of those incidences. I always, as a matter of rule, just keep some stuff that I can just serve if I ever have that problem. So I'll have cold meat always in my freezer, just in case something like that will happen on Shabbat. Have you had any incidences you'd like to share about food particularly and Shabbat observances? I'd love to hear. 34519 is our SMS line. 061-895-1019 is our WhatsApp number. This is 101.9 Chai FM.
This is Mystical Text with Adel Kazilski.
Okie dokie, let's continue. And just actually before we continue, the last comment on cooking, baking on Shabbat is, please speak to your rabbi. It's a vast world. It's something that I think out of all the melachot, it dominates a lot of our Shabbat observance. And it's important that we understand what it is that we can and we cannot do. And of course, I remember, and it's still pertinent to us, maybe to a lesser extent, the Beis Din putting out a whole lot of laws of what happens on Shabbat when we have load shedding or you have a power cut and the food coming on and off, etc., etc. Please ask them to assist you and giving you the proper guidelines of what you can and what you cannot do. Right, we're going to move on. I want to go to a whole bunch of other av melachot, maybe another three or four. The first one I'm going to talk about is the one called goizes, which is shearing. What is shearing? When you detach a non-living part from an animal or person. So again, yes, none of us, well, most of us, I should say, don't have sheep, and we're not going to go and cut off the wool off them on Shabbat. That is an av melacha. You're not allowed to do that. But what is some toladot? What are some derivatives of them? Well, one, for example, is that you cannot pull any wool by hand from a living animal, because that is an unusual form of shearing, or you can't pluck feathers by hand from a living or a non-living bird. I don't think any of us are going to do that, but an example of a tolada is cutting hair. Cutting hair is detaching a non-living part from a person or an animal. So that's why we do not go to the hairdresser on Shabbat. We do not cut our hair. We also don't cut our nails, because our nails are non-living parts, so we do not cut our nails. And even going more further than that, you cannot bite your nail or skin on Shabbat, because again, you're removing that which is dead from the living part of yourself. Brushing hair is a part of the next halakha, and that is menapets, where we've got the av melacha of combing, where you can't untangle clumps of raw material into separate stands. So when we are brushing our hair, we have to be really, really careful that we don't have a brush that, you know, once you've brushed, you know, sometimes you get these like harsh brushes, you brush your hair, particularly with girls, and they have very, very thick hair, and then there's a whole clump of hair found on the brush. You can use a very soft brush that doesn't pull out any hairs, but you've got to be careful about that. Obviously, a man is not allowed to pull out hairs from his beard on Shabbat. That is detaching, going back to the goizes, detaching a non-living part from a person or an animal. Okay, so that is goizes, shearing, and menapets, which is combing. Those are just some ideas on that. Then we've got another two melachot, the one called melabein, which is bleaching, which is freeing material from unwanted dirt, stains, or dust. And obviously that falls out very much with washing your clothes. So we don't wash clothes on Shabbat because we do not want to bleach them, free the material from unwanted dirt stains. So one cannot wring out wet clothing, one cannot soak clothing, one cannot scrub clothing, one cannot hang up clothing to dry, because it may lead people to think that it was washed on Shabbat. You're also not allowed to shake or clean visible dust from dark colored clothing. But if, you know, there's barely visible dust on light-colored clothing, then you can. You're also not allowed to soak clothing. So you've got to be careful with all of that. And that really is all the derivative around the idea of bleaching. We also have then the concept of tzoveya, which is dyeing. Now, dyeing is changing or reinforcing a color. So obviously, one cannot paint with a paintbrush. One cannot spray paint. One cannot use coloring paper or crayons or paint. One cannot change a color of a material by heating it in a dye. And here is one very interesting thing, and this is a big bother for the woman. You cannot use oil-based makeup on Shabbat. So we do have the concept of Shabbos cosmetics. They are overseen by rabbinical authorities. Again, speak around in your community, speak to your rebbetzin, speak to your rabbi. There is Shabbos makeup that one can use that has ticked all the boxes about Shabbat. One of the things, for example, that comes from this tzoveya is you cannot like reapply lipstick on Shabbat because that is considered like, I guess, painting. This time painting your lips, not painting the house. So there are Shabbat cosmetics that, for example, there is lipstick that you can put on Erev Shabbat. It stays on the whole of Shabbat. There's also eyeliners, et cetera, et cetera. I'm more of the natural view, so I don't koch too much in the cosmetics, but there definitely is a space, a place, and the ability, again, to have Oinek Shabbos, to enjoy Shabbat, look beautiful within the confines of Shabbat. Another one of dyeing is food that may be colored in order to improve its flavor. You've got to be careful there if you're pouring some type of colorant in there that will get you into trouble. So here is another four of them. Again, I'm giving you very, very few of each melacha just to give you a taste of how we derive that which we cannot do on Shabbat. This is 101.9 Chai FM.
This is Mystical Text with Adel Kazilski.
Okay, I'm going to zip through now five of the melachot that really don't, that are complicated. They all have to do with the process of making cloth. And they are as follows. Toive, which is spinning, twisting a strand of fiber into thread. Mesich, which is the threading loom, tying the thread from the front to the back roller. Okay. Ha'oiseshne bate nirin, threading the harness. Oirev, which is weaving. And poitseya, which is separating thread. So it's quite complicated the way they used to make material in the olden days. Today we do not do it, so we're not too worried. Thank God we just go to the shops and buy our clothes. But from all of this, we understand that we cannot crochet, we cannot do tapestry, we cannot knit, we cannot do anything that will be conducive into making some type of cloth. And a tolada of that, for example, is that one cannot braid one's hair because it comes into the same thing of the way that the threads are kneaded one into another. That's where I'd like to stop right now. Please do not take things on face value over here. I am just giving you food for thought. Please contact an Orthodox rabbi for any questions you've had on anything that I've discussed to get elucidation, direction, and halachic authority on what is right and wrong. Though I do hope that I have expanded your minds and that it gives you a little bit more understanding on how to keep Shabbat properly. We will continue this series next week. In the meantime, let me wish you all a Shavua Tov and see you again next time. This is 101.9 Chai FM.